I'm Freddie, host of Unforgotten, a podcast series which dives into the 2009 unsolved murder of Matt Stewart. The following is a special question and answer episode, featuring a conversation recorded earlier this week between myself and Steve, moderator of the Unforgotten Forum, located at unforgotten.freeforums.net. The forum is not directly affiliated with the podcast, but we share a similar goal in generating attention to and conversation about this still unresolved case. If you have any suggestions about topics or questions to be included in future special episodes, you can submit them on the forum. Sign up at unforgotten.freeforums.net. And now, here's the episode.
Today I was hoping to give you a short Q&A on some of the stuff being discussed on the forums, just to bring those questions and theories to the wider audience.
Fantastic. Let's do it.
Okay, well, let's jump right in. So one forum member made the comment, "I knew Matt pretty well and loved him like a brother, but there are some words of his to me that I've been playing over and over in my head for years. While speaking with Matt one day, I mentioned that one of my siblings went to school with Matt. Matt said that they probably didn't like him because he was a different person back then. Then Matt proceeded to say, 'I hope that God has forgiven me. I was involved with some very bad people, but I don't want to talk about it.' I've wondered for years if it could have been one of those very bad people. Matt was truly an awesome person, friend, dad, and husband, and I am in no way speaking bad of him. He was really loved by all who knew him. This leads me to ask you, what do we really know about Matt when he was younger? Is there a reason to think that some past of his might have caught up to him?"
I can speak only through the experiences and conversations that I've had dealing with folks that knew Matt. I never got to know Matt personally. I wasn't there while he was growing up, but, you know, I have spent hours and hours talking with various people who knew him at different points in his life. In the next episode, I'll be giving some of Matt's friends from his youth a chance to speak. You know, like a lot of teenagers, he experimented with drugs. You know, when you talk about like a past, I mean, he definitely, by all accounts, he was a normal teen in that way, and that he did experiment with drugs. There are certainly accounts from close friends of his in his late teens and early 20s that he got to a point where it was maybe becoming too much. There are some accounts of him maybe selling marijuana a little bit. But I'd say by and large, it's also something that a lot of people in their teens go through. It didn't go beyond to a point where you would think years later there would be retribution for anything. I mean, he wasn't dealing with gangs or anything. He found the Lord and he got, you know, recommitted to his religion. Basically, everyone that I've spoken with since that point, they've indicated to me it wasn't a empty conversion. He very much changed his life. The idea that Matt was being involved in crime or drugs or anything is just beyond the realm of their comprehension. Most people I talked with were skeptical that something from his past would be an attributing factor to his murder. He was just kind of a rowdy kid growing up in suburbia.
Okay, great. Another question came up, one that I think we briefly touched on in the last Q&A, but just to eliminate any confusion. Do we know for sure that the police came to the scene with canine units to try and track the killer?
Yes. You know, I've talked with neighbors who remember the police bringing in the dogs, and there's, I believe, one news article, and there's definitely one news clip that talked about Mooresville Police Department or the FBI, one of those two agencies, actually bringing in bomb-sniffing dogs from Alabama. And I think because they were bringing them in from Alabama or something, it seemed important enough or noteworthy enough to put in the news. To me, as someone that really is hoping that this was investigated as thoroughly as possible, is reassuring to know that they went all out because they knew it was such a horrible crime.
Let's move on to something else that was brought up by more than one person. There seems to be some confusion about Hannah's sleepover. The pastor specifically mentioned that this was her first sleepover ever, a claim that also shows up online on another forum that was around at the time of the murder. Yet in the interview with you, Hannah specifically says that this was a sleepover two doors down like I did almost every weekend. What's the source of the discrepancy here?
I talked with her first. I later talked with Pastor Wicker, and then I had the opportunity to ask her to clarify that discrepancy, and she basically said that what she meant by she slept over every weekend was that she had sleepovers quite a bit, but it typically, the venue was her house. It was not typical for her to sleep over. I don't think she said that it was the first time, but she did say that it was maybe one of the first times, or that it was unusual. Basically, she said that she had to ask her mom, and she was really hoping that she would say yes, and she did say yes.
Okay, one of the neighbors made a post wondering if the police ever took metal detectors through the large bushes that ran behind their house. Have you heard anything either way?
No, I have not.
Okay. Forum member Second Best did point out that there is at least one commercially available .40-caliber revolver. It's possible that both guns were revolvers, which would explain the lack of casings that have been mentioned by more than one person, although that hasn't been confirmed by police. Does this change the thinking about the attack?
Does it change the thinking about the attack? The thing about the casing is something that has kind of gone around. I've heard that from multiple sources, that there weren't any shell casings. I'd want to be careful to say that the reality of this being an open investigation makes it so there's no way for us to know. You know, I found it interesting enough to put in the podcast and convincing enough to me that multiple neighbors claim to have heard this from law enforcement directly. If both weapons were revolvers, just talking with people that know a lot more about guns than I do, getting a silencer for a revolver is much more difficult than other kinds of semi-automatic weapons. Revolvers tend to be louder than others. So it would explain better the lack of shell casing, then it would also raise other questions. I guess either way you look at it, it would be odd. The whole scenario is just so unusual to begin with. I'm glad that people were able to find that about the .40-caliber revolver. I want to learn more about that, and I think we certainly could use some more eyes on this.
Okay. That's a call out to all of you people. So come on, get on board. unforgotten.freeforums.net. You can give us your expertise and help us understand some elements of this case. All right. Another member mentioned that she had heard that 7 months after Matt was murdered, Angel accused a family member of the murder, a cousin or something. Have you heard anything about this?
I have. I have not found any indication that there were any outright accusations, and I think that was alluded to in the second episode when talking about people that were thought of, and I've had the opportunity to speak with some of those folks and kind of dive into that theory a bit more as far as there being people, certain people that suspected others in the family.
Mm-hmm. All right. In one of the more popular threads, the member Scarcrow proposed a route out of the neighborhood that would have taken the killer or killers to an area near a business park or something, an area where they could then drive away and not have to go near the main road at all. At first, there was this idiot on there suggesting it could explain the barking dogs talked about in an early episode, but you quickly shot that down. And for the record, I was the idiot making that comment. But still, this is a compelling option, isn't it? Do we know if this area was searched or investigated?
Like I said on the forum, I mean, talking to a neighbor who lived near where the person who posted that, Matt, where they had Matt kind of entering the woods. And I remember talking with that neighbor and asking, they remember there being searching around that area, the southern end of Shepherd's Hill Drive. And he said he did not remember. But that said, he didn't give any indication that he was watching investigators like a hawk or anything. They were there for days on end. It's unclear at this point. Personally, I would really hope so, unless there was substantial evidence elsewhere that the person used another route and they were able to confirm that. But from what I've heard, that's not the case. Other neighbors say that they report police telling them that there was question as to how this person got away. They were perplexed by that. So I would hope that one of the things they did was do a full canvas of the area, look at the certain scenarios, and go into the woods. And hopefully they did that. It's clear that there were defensive wounds. It's quite possible that
the person running away would have blood dripping and there would be evidence. So you would hope that it was thoroughly searched and hopefully they were able to determine how this person got away.
Sure. Uh-huh. So now on to two threads that I personally started. The first one was about these healing rooms I've heard about. What are they exactly? And did Angel or Matt work in these rooms?
The healing room is a place where the members of the church practice praying for healing by laying on of hands, which is, if you're not familiar, a practice commonly associated with, I sound like a college lecturer. It's a practice that Pentecostal Christians are known to do, where they lay hands on people who are ill or sick or in need of some sort of healing, and they expect kind of miraculous things to happen, and sometimes they report that miraculous healing. Matt's wife was involved in the healing rooms at one time. And I'm not sure exactly what that post is alluding to, but I mean, I have confirmed that. But there were many others as well, and it's certainly a prominent part of the church. That was a long answer.
Cofactor Fall posted a comment that Angel was under hypnosis when she helped develop that sketch of the suspect. Is that true?
I mean, I can only say what I've been told. I remember even at the time, people close to the family talking about that police used hypnosis to get that image.
So right after the murder, her description was just that the suspect was tall, or was there more to it than that? I'm trying to get a feel for how this sketch developed.
Before, I think my impression was, from what I've heard, her description was just that it was a tall man. And through hypnosis, they were able to come up with that sketch.
Okay. There's also been a thread questioning your honesty in dealing with the family in interviews, suggesting that you didn't give them complete information up front about the intent of the podcast. I know you've already responded to this on the forums, but transparency is important. If they feel that they've been misrepresented in any way, would you be willing to have them come on and explain their side of everything?
Yes, I've offered that. I would continue to offer that. You know, I would say, in terms of, are there any allegations that I took interviews without consent, I would have a problem with that. I do have audio of every individual that was featured in an interview on the podcast consenting to be on the podcast. So that's a verifiable fact. Other than that, if people want to talk about my intent being bad, then, you know, they're welcome to think that. I've never had any kind of agenda other than facilitating a place where people can share their stories and, you know, a mechanism through which we can get the story out and hopefully generate more leads for this case. It's been suggested that certain things in the podcast are untrue. I've tried to be careful on what I've said on the podcast, even what I've allowed to be in the podcast of what other people have said, in terms of not wanting to point fingers, not wanting to make wild accusations or spread pure rumors. Having done all of that, it's certainly disheartening kind of accusation that, you know, I've somehow been reckless with this or malicious. I'm not looking for anything other than to get this out there. That's my prerogative. And if that's a bad thing, if that somehow makes me a bad person, then I guess people can think that. I mean, I'm a little, I guess I'm at a loss for the reasoning behind why I would want to lie. I guess I've been limited in the voices that I've been able to use because there are certain people that won't talk. And since the beginning, if someone has told me I don't want to be involved in this podcast, I'm not the one to call them again or email them or whatever. Once they decline, I move on. So because their voices aren't in there, there may be certain things that they could clarify or that they could discount. I would love to add their voices. Or maybe if they don't want it to be on my podcast, maybe they'll start their own podcast. I think that would be great. As long as we're talking about the murder of Matt Stewart, I think it's a travesty that this thing hasn't been fleshed out in the media and in the public. There are so many others that when a tragic thing like this happened, the public grabbed a hold of it. And any lead or any kind of progress was highly scrutinized and talked about. And you know, people want constantly were pushing law enforcement, pushing investigators, or pushing anyone that might know something. You have to tell us. We have to get the truth out there. And for Matt, I don't feel he was given that in the press. I think there's ample evidence of that lack of attention. I want the story told, every angle, anything that we can find. 9 years is too damn long.
Agreed.
Well, that would be a great thing for some of the listeners to consider doing. If you listen to other podcasts or know of other places where this story could be rebroadcast or approached from a different way, let those people know. Also, with respect to the family members coming onto the podcast to give their own opinions on things, it would also be a great opportunity for them to clear up some of the mystery about that night and give them a way to reach thousands of people who are also interested in finding out just what happened. Finally, a quick reminder to all, especially those listeners who live in the neighborhood, we're still trying to get a confirmed floor plan to the house. If your house is the same style, please drop Freddie a note or come and post it on the forums. It would be a big help. Okay, that about wraps up the stuff that I have to talk about. Anything you want to add? Maybe a little hint as to where we're going for the season finale?
Season finale. When you put it like that, there's a lot of pressure. we're definitely will be talking with some more people that would not like for their identity to be revealed. So if you liked that part of earlier episodes, then you'll love this final episode. there have been some real cool folks that I've gotten to know through this process that were good friends with Matt that I've been talking with for months that haven't been on the podcast yet. And I'm going to get some of their thoughts on the podcast, which I think will be really cool. And I would definitely want to tamper down expectations for folks that are expecting an ending. If you've gotten into this podcast hoping that it will all wrap up in the end, I have some terrible news. It's not going to. It'll probably present many more questions. And the way that we wrap this up is by getting it out, continuing to get it out there, broadcasting this, making sure that this becomes national news. Then we can bring the pressure, we can bring the heat, and under that spotlight, I think we can find out what happens.
Also, just to be clear, you're not disappearing after the fifth episode, are you? Will this feed still be active?
I've never wanted to be a podcaster. That may sound like self-serving to say, because I'm obviously doing it. My goal for this from the beginning was just to get the story out there. So I'm hoping that this becomes a national story, or at least a regional story that professional investigative reporters can pick up and, you know, look into, and that I can go back to living my semi-ordinary life in Florida. But my intention, if that doesn't happen, is to start the podcast up in February again with 5 more episodes leading up to the 10-year anniversary of this tragedy. If there are no answers, if there's no visible progress, we need either an arrest, or we need to pass this off to fresh eyes, or we need to call in experts. We need some sort of movement. We can't just continue to trust that things are being looked into. So that will continue to be a push.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again for all of your time, all of your efforts in putting this stuff together and answering the questions for the forum members. I can assure you that the forums aren't going anywhere. Remember to come and visit and join the conversation at unforgotten.freeforums.net. If you have thoughts, opinions, or information, we want to hear from you.
All right.
Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida. As always, this series is dedicated to the life of Matt Stewart. May his memory remain unforgotten.